Thank you. And so now we'll ask, and there will be time for questions for everybody then. Lara Allen from the Humanitarian Centre.
So there is light, and we are purposefully performing the difference between academic presentations and non-academic presentations, or inside outside. There are other reasons for it too, but so my name is Lara Allen. I'm the director of the Humanitarian Centre, and I'm going to talk about the question of making a difference in practice, and that's supposed to be a foil to the next talk, which is about making a difference in policy. So what Will asked me to talk about, the email said, can you provide an NGO perspective on how the academic community could make a bigger impact from their research in the area of food security? But I would like to swing that brief to ask, how can academics and NGOs work together to impact positively on food security? Because I don't think it's a question of how academics can make that impact all on your own. I don't think that's your job necessarily. So the question is, how can we work together to make sure that impact does actually happen? But I'd like to cycle round to that question, and that's basically what we'll be discussing at the end. But I want to give you a little bit of background about where we're coming from in Humanitarian Centre, where we've been and where we're going, and potentially how we could do that together. So the Humanitarian Centre is an NGO. We're not officially part of the university. We have a student society part of the university, but we're an NGO. We're actually an umbrella organisation of NGOs, academics and businesses who work together to address global inequality and poverty. Our basic premise is that cross-sector collaboration generates innovative approaches to big challenges in international development. So there's been a fair amount of conversation about how difficult it is to have interdisciplinary conversations. Our job is to have cross-sector conversations, which is even more complicated. And the reasons for that are that the different sectors have different approaches, very different languages, and most importantly, different metrics for success. And that's what makes that conversation challenging and a big opportunity to get it right, because it's really not easy. So the value that we tried to add to these conversations is providing the link or the bridge or the translation service or sometimes the mediation between the different sectors, trying to keep everybody still doing what they do well, but working together towards a bigger goal. So the Humanitarian Centre was started in 2007. It's Cambridge-based. And for the past 5 years, it has focused its, we have focused our rather large ambition of doing something helpful for global inequality and poverty. We've tried to focus that big agenda by focusing on different themes each year. So we've had a public health year, and we've had a technology for development year, and last year was our food security year, which is why we know a number of the people in this room. We spent the last 9 months going through a strategic planning process, and we're keeping our higher ideals and our bigger aims, but we're focusing down what we're trying to do and articulating it and doing it in a more focused way. So we now have a new strategy, a new name, and new metrics for success. What we want to do is to posit our long-term aim is to positively impact on the lives of poor people in the developing world. And that means, in effect, in terms of the kinds of things we do every day, is that we will be running less events, and be focusing more time on longer term projects. And what that means is as long as it takes to make a difference. So going forward, in about a month's time, we will officially be called the Center for Global Equality. For those of us who know and love the Humanitarian Center as the Humanitarian Center, we had two reasons. We had to change the name from humanitarian because our members no longer do humanitarian relief. So it was just basically misleading. But in our search for a new name, we went round many circles many times. But eventually we chose global equality as our big ambition because we believe that inequality is the single unifying need for all 17 of the new Sustainable Development Goals. So taking a step back, the big ambition under those goals is reduce inequality and you won't have to worry about the other stuff. Poverty is an outcome of inequality, etc. So our specific aim in the Humanitarian Center is to contribute to reducing global inequality by addressing knowledge inequality and the effects of this knowledge inequality on the bottom billion in the world. When I'm being glib and trying to quickly explain this to people, I say, you know, there's been all this fuss about food waste, the fact that Europe wastes more food than Africa produces, but we can't get the food from Europe to Africa, so people go hungry. That's about inequality. It's about waste. It's about having too much in one place and not enough in the other. So then I say, what we're doing is addressing knowledge waste. We think there's lots of wasted knowledge or surplus knowledge that is generated in places like universities, not just in Cambridge, but in universities all over the world. And this inequality is in countries as well as across countries. There is also knowledge generated in businesses and in many global NGOs. Believe it or not, that knowledge doesn't get out down to the people who really need it all too often. So what we're trying to do is find ways of transporting, metaphorically, this underused knowledge to places where it's needed. And we focus on the bottom billion because, the first two talks, we're talking about changing the practice of big companies, which is a really big, a good way of making a big difference. But it's also a reflection of the fact that there's money in changing the practices of big companies. There's much less money available to change the practices or enable people, the poorest billion of the world, to change their practices. And that's the sector that we're trying to focus on. So how do we do this? Well, we're evolving models at the moment. And we work across those three sectors of academic, business, and civil society. And we have different models depending on where the particular initiative starts. So we might have an initiative that starts with NGOs, a problem that an NGO is facing in the field, or we could have initiative could start in academia or in business. But basically, there's a five-stage process. The first is identification, so identifying the question. This is not news for researchers. The first thing you have to do is identify the question. The important thing for us politically is that we want to make sure that those questions come from people who are experiencing the problems. This is the pathway, the civil society pathway. So we would always make sure that the question is defined by people experiencing the problem in the field rather than sitting somewhere in the West in a university and identifying a question. Then we convene people, mostly in Cambridge, but increasingly bringing people here or bringing them here digitally to discuss this particular wicked problem or grand challenge. And our theory there is that we bring together people who wouldn't normally talk to each other. And our theory is that that conversation sometimes, and it's remarkable how often it does, generate an innovative response. some of those innovative responses last longer than the discussion. And those go into the third stage, which is incubating and testing that particular response. If it survives through that stage, if it's still proving worthwhile, then there's a rather difficult stage of supporting that initiative into being. Often that means starting an organization or an NGO or a large project, at which point lots of projects fall apart. But if the organization survives, then we ask that organization or project that we have spent lots of time and energy on to integrate back into our network and to give back to this body of people who are trying to make this kind of difference and support members going forward. So that's our incubation pathway. That's if we're starting with a question in NGOs. Starting with a question in universities, we are presently exploring the potential of making an impact in collaboration with people in universities on three levels, through research, through coursework, undergraduate and master's coursework, and through extracurricular volunteering. And the crossover and collaboration between those three levels is quite an interesting and productive space to work in. So in volunteering as a center, we are working on best practice in international volunteering. This is much needed. The UK doesn't have any best practice in policy, which is very interesting. Ireland does, but the UK doesn't. And we work with student societies working internationally. In coursework, we have, over the last few years, worked with Computer Lab, with Sustainable Engineering, and with JBS, finding small projects to, in collaboration with usually small NGOs that need that capacity working in the field. So I won't dwell on that, but that's going on. And then the final question is research. So that becomes more complicated, but the possibilities of impact much bigger and much deeper. So our question to ourselves and to our collaborators is, how is it possible to create an enabling environment for research to make impact? And we're looking at this on two levels. One is finding ways of using the research after it's finished, so the rollout of research. But increasingly, we're interested in the process of doing that exercise of how to roll out this innovative research. We have arrived in a place where we would really like to be collaborating with researchers while the research is being done, because if the research question had been slightly tweaked earlier in the process, it would have been much easier to roll it out and make a difference. So I guess this is a call for, if you want to do research that you one day want to make an impact, make a difference to people's lives, I think the earlier you have that conversation with people who might use your research, the better. And if there's a possibility of keeping that conversation going on throughout the research process, I think that's something we could really talk about and something we could that would make a really big difference. Don't worry, I'm getting there. So what are the blocks to achieving impact? From our perspective, the question of different metrics for success is a big block, and it's something we need to address. Businesses want to see the bottom line, academics want to publish in journals, and NGOs want to affect the lives. So we want to achieve different things, and that needs to be talked about all the way through. Also, academics necessarily must ask very specific questions to very specific usually are asking very specific questions and produce very specific answers. You must, because you're pushing the edge on very expert science very often. But it's almost as if you produce the catalyst without the other chemicals and without the medium. So in order for that catalyst to make a difference in people's lives, someone has to be put together the other chemicals needed and the medium in order for that catalyst to work. So that's what we're trying to do. So we can, when a scientist produces a catalyst, an answer, the changing of a gene in a important food crop, then we will try to convene all the other experts, the policy people, the politicians, the people who understand culture in the specific place or globally if that's necessary. Try to convene, bring together all the different experts to talk about how this might be rolled out. Somebody said this morning, it would be great, but I don't know if it'll ever get out of the lab. So we try to bring together the people and the resources that make it possible to take that intervention to the field. So finally, can I just say, why don't we just leave the impact to non-academics? Let me just tell you a few things about civil society. Civil society doesn't have access to your research results because the journals are too expensive. If civil society did have access, it's very difficult to understand the disciplinary jargon. So civil society would need to employ a scientist to understand the paper. Funding structures are very risk averse. We have to tell our funders what we're going to achieve at the beginning of the project. That's something the funders need to sort out. Civil society works in silos, and generally NGOs are very overstretched and resource poor. Doesn't sound like a really good opportunity, does it? But it is a missed opportunity, because it's a missed opportunity for civil society, for academia, and for the people in the world who are hungry. We think, okay, I'm not going to tell you what we think because I want to know what you think. So, as academics, I have two questions for you. What stops you from working with non-academics to increase the impact of your research? And what could be done to address these blocks?
Great. Thank you very much. That's a fascinating insight into the Humanitarian Centre and the journey you're on to becoming the Centre for Global Equality. That's the first I've heard of it. And you ended up with two great questions, which we'll pick up in the plenary discussion. With that, I'll ask Steve.